Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Queer Feminist Switch. I'm Laura Verbich and I'm your host of this podcast. And I've created this special educational podcast spotlight called Indigenous Feminism and Sexuality, an Introduction To, which aims to break down and explain some of the impacts of settler colonialism within Canada, as well as bring light to the ways in which Indigenous peoples, scholars, and feminists have worked to decolonize knowledge, education, research, and community. The topics of today's focus are introductory based. We'll be talking about decolonizing research, colonization 101, and focusing on an anti-oppressive feminist framework within Two-Spirit LGBTQIA+ advocacy, environmental violence, and the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Please join me today on this special episode where we will be drawing upon some of my favorite Indigenous scholars as well as other resources and researchers. I hope this podcast will enlighten and inspire you to expand in your own personal research and leave knowing a little bit more about the lives and struggles and victories of Indigenous peoples in Canada. This is a project for my Indigenous Community and Sexualities course at Concordia University, and also an extreme labor of love, as educating in this way has always been a passion of mine. Please feel free to share this episode with friends and family, and please be sure to check out the description in which you'll find resources and citations. Happy learning, and thank you for being here. We have been taught, due to colonialism, that there are only certain acceptable ways through which to conduct research, to learn, and ways to be in general. We're caught in a Eurocentric Western supremacy loop that disparages literally everything that it considers other. As such, within Western colonial and capitalist societies such as Canada and the US, the self is divorced from community and from nature. Individualism is valued above the collective, and there is a clear hierarchy. Marginalized communities such as Black, Brown, Indigenous, and people of color, as well as women, Two-Spirit, LGBTQIA+ people, poor, neurodivergent, migrant, and disabled folks, among others, are cast aside, excluded from society, and then blamed for their own oppression. Kathleen Absalon, an Anishinaabe researcher, social worker, and scholar, explains that it is vitally important to begin our research and our search by freeing space in our spirits, hearts, minds, and body by first unpacking colonialism. Because decolonization and holism, becoming whole, the connection of spirit, heart, mind, and body, it's all interconnected. Echoing Audre Lorde's feminist work, Kathleen Absalon says that, quote, "You cannot dismantle colonial ideologies using the colonizer's knowledge tools," end quote. By questioning the status quo then, and challenging our own internalized colonialism, we can wake ourselves up to what Absalon calls the colonial coma. By making the nuances of colonial methodologies visible to ourselves and to each other, as we're doing right here, right now, we decolonize the search journey and we can begin to heal both ourselves and the collective. In Western societies dominated by capitalism, there are only a few methods of research that are viewed as legitimate. And that includes those accepted by the university, whether it be secondary resources, such as looking up other people's resources and research and citing that as your own, whether it be participant observation, whether it be conducting polls and collecting data. These are ways in which the Western colonial powers accept research and information. Indigenous scholars and researchers, however, use and mobilize so many other techniques through which knowledge is not only revered in their communities, but accepted. Beyond the Western knowledge systems include art-based research methods, such as painting, weaving, beading, nature-based research methods, such as being out in the land, communing with nature, connecting to nature and to spirit. Oral research methods, such as speaking with elders, tribal members, members in the community, and other ways. Mobilizing these types of resources and these types of research allow for that holism that Kathleen Absalon speaks about, that connection of spirit, heart, mind, and body, because all four of these elements are important. For more information about research methods beyond the colonial institutions, please check out, I highly recommend, Kathleen Absalon's book called Kendosawin, How We Come to Know Indigenous Research Methodologies. Now let's move on. Audre Lorde famously said that the personal is political. And if this is true, which evidently is the rest of this podcast episode and all my other work and all the work of every person who is cited throughout this episode contends, the personal is political, then it is absolutely true then that a powerful aspect of research is personal experience and personal growth, personal exploration, and things that are important and life-giving and life-changing for oneself. Our personalness is interconnected throughout our different aspects of our intersectional identities. These aspects of our identities connect us to the communities of people around us. The fact is that who we are and our very existence is political. That is why it is so important in Indigenous research, Kathleen Absalon reminds us, that we value personal knowledge, personal searching, and personal experiences as legitimate research. Researching, including ourself. Allowing ourselves to understand that at a microcosm level, the personal and the community are the same. And in order to decolonize our minds, in order to drop the colonizer's hypnosis upon us and dismantle the colonizer's ideologies, we have to go beyond the colonizer's knowledge tools. We must remember this. So using our own personal experiences moving forward, our own personal feelings moving forward, we can allow this work, this intersectional feminist work, this Indigenous feminist work, and this decolonization work, we can allow this to change ourselves. As it changes ourselves, it affects our communities. And as it affects our communities, we are mobilized to create change. So let us first start with some theory. So let's start with some colonization 101. It's been posited by scholars such as Jackie Alexander and Chandra Mahanty that decolonization involves thinking oneself out of spaces of domination. So decolonizing is in the mind and it's in the practice. These both scholars argue that actually decolonization will transpire only through praxis. And praxis is feminist lingo for theory coupled with practice. So let us get down to the theory first. What is settler colonialism? And how does it impact Indigenous communities today? It is argued that settler colonialism is premised on a logic of elimination, in which the genocidal erasure of Indigenous peoples is sanctioned and perpetuated by the governments of a nation. when Christopher Columbus and his little goonies stumbled across Turtle Island, the name which the indigenous communities across North America call these lands, that is when settler colonialism began. Until now, this project is ongoing. Actually, encoded within Canadian legislation is the Indian Act, first passed in 1876, which is a federal law that governs in matters pertaining to Indian status, bands, and Indian reserves. There have been many amendments made to this Indian Act since its inception, but it is highly encoded in patriarchal and hierarchical language still. Mobilized greatly within the Indian Act is racism. It serves as a legitimizing function for colonial claims to Indigenous territories and the violence inflicted upon Indigenous peoples and their lands. There are countless ways in which European powers sought to dominate and erase indigeneity, including the 60 Scoop, which was the mass removal of Aboriginal children from their families into residential schools for cultural, linguistic, and physical destruction of their Indigenous identities. Many survivors from the residential schools are alive today and suffering through generational trauma inflicted upon them. As we now know and has been discovered, hundreds of mass graves have been found filled with the bodies of Indigenous children from these Catholic residential schools, which is literal proof of their attempted genocide. Present-day systemic racism and institutionalized patriarchal rule over Indigenous communities and lands continues this legacy. However, there are many Indigenous activists and feminists and their allies who are working hard, as we are here, to decolonize Canada, education, research, and ourselves, and of course working for hashtag land back and restoration of Indigenous sovereignty. Speaking of land back, in 1996, at the 7th session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the International Indian Treaty Council explained that, quote, from a traditional perspective, the health of our peoples cannot be separated from the health of our environment, the practice of our spirituality, and the expression of our inherent right to self-determination, upon which the mental, physical, and social health of our communities is based, end quote. This is echoed in Kathleen Absalon's book. She explains that the Anishinaabe people, as well as all other Indigenous communities across Turtle Island, are holistically and deeply connected to the land, the animals, the seas, the winds, all aspects that make up this world, including the spiritual dimensions and community to one another. So if this is so, if bodies are connected to the land and are connected to spirit and to one another, then the violence that is inflicted upon the earth, the seas, the animal, and yes, one another, is violence inflicted upon our own selves. This interconnectedness is made manifest through praxis. Again, theory plus practice. By Indigenous activists and feminists who are always fighting for the earth and for its people. Capitalism requires ever-growing and unceasing production and consumption. That's the world we live in now. It's a legacy of colonization. Such rapid movement requires, sadly, the destruction of the world's natural resources. At this point in time, we're poised upon a grand precipice of global climate catastrophe. At the rate we're going, unless nations adopt drastic and immediate environmental policies and stick to them, the Earth could be crossing a critical threshold within the next decade, according to a report done by the New York Times. Beyond the conceptual, what is environmental violence and how is it connected to Indigenous bodies? A study conducted by the Women's Earth Alliance and Native Youth Sexual Health Network explained that many Indigenous people in Canada and the U.S. today live on lands that are rich in natural resources. Because our governments are extractive ones, And capitalism's global economic system is based on an insatiable supply of natural resources. Indigenous communities often occupy a violent and dangerous space in this extractive industry. Amanda Lickers of the Turtle Clan, Seneca, says, quote, "If you're destroying and poisoning the things that give us life, the things that shape our identity, the places that we are from, and the things that sustain us, then how can you not be poisoning us? How can that not be direct violence against our bodies, whether it be respiratory illness or cancer or liver failure or the inability to carry children?" End quote. Many organizations comprised of Indigenous land defenders and their allies are currently organizing and mobilizing against this extractive industry, fighting to take back the land and to take back their own bodies. In the Tiwa community, for example, a collective by the name of Tiwa's Women's United, TWU, again, Healthy Sexuality and Body Sovereignty Project, uplifts the voices of women of that land in advocacy for the reclamation of their land, because it has currently become so polluted that the highest rate of miscarriages in the area are a direct result of toxic exposure. And this is being argued, it is the modern day form of sterilization. And it is well known that the government of Canada and U.S. sanctioned sterilization of Indigenous women, and it was a commonplace practice until about 40 to 50 years ago, and in many cases still happens today. So this violence of land extraction and this violence of land pollution is continuously literally killing and harming Indigenous lives. So the connection is clear, crystal clear, and yet we are continuously screaming into the void. Speaking of screaming into the void, in the book called Making Space for Indigenous Feminism, edited by Joyce Green, we learn that Indigenous feminists, women, and gender diverse people continue to be, as they have always been, at the forefront of anti-oppression activists and advocacy work. It's important to remember here that feminism is not a monolith, and neither are Indigenous women, Indigenous peoples, and communities. Feminism, Robin Bourgeois explains, analyzes the diversity of women's experiences in the cultural, political, and other spaces. Quote, "Anti-oppressive feminisms acknowledge and recognize the simultaneous impact of colonialism, racism, and patriarchy in the lives of Indigenous women and girls and their communities, and advocate dismantling these dominant systems of oppressions collectively." End quote. With this understanding of Indigenous feminisms, let's talk a little bit about the Two-Spirit and LGBTQIA+ communities, and how they mobilize feminism and sexuality in order to affect change. One of the major ways in which anti-oppressive work is mobilized is through the Truth and Reconciliation efforts in Canada. The Truth and Reconciliation Committee was put into place in order to historically and factually document and bring to light the horrors of the residential school program, aka the 60s scoop. And they definitely did that. Their final reports in 2015 included a list of 94 call to actions for the government of Canada to implement in order to begin to reconcile not only for the residential schools, but for the legacy of destruction towards their individual communities, cultures, languages, and customs. The Truth and Reconciliation's detailed report can be found in the citations of this episode. Under the section labeled Justice, item number 41 states, "We call upon the federal government, in consultation with Aboriginal organizations, to appoint a public inquiry into the causes of and remedies for the disproportionate victimization of Aboriginal women and girls. The inquiry's mandate would include, number 1, investigation into missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls, and number 2, links to the intergenerational legacy of residential schools." End quote. The gendered violence that began during colonization and was written into law in the Indian Act is being regenerated, revamped, reused, and continuously happening, especially with the disappearances and murders of Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. Bourgeois posits that the aggressive war waged by the Canadian state against Indigenous women and girls began in 1867 with the political creation of Canada. By literally legally binding women's identity as Indigenous on their marital status and on their blood quantum. At the same time, Canadian government, since colonization, has hypersexualized and dehumanized women, Two-Spirit, and trans individuals. The violence of the residential schools is an underlying factor in the violence against women and girls, Bourgeois posits. The legacy of Canadian officials literally not caring about the safety and well-being of Indigenous peoples, especially women, is highly visible here. Inquiries into these missing girls and women are slowly happening, but oftentimes people's cases just keep getting pushed, and there are so many other legislative obstacles towards getting any kind of justice. Another way in which Indigenous scholars and researchers and feminists and thinkers theorize the gendered violence against Indigenous communities is through the colonial violence of erasure of the complex genders and sexualities that exist within Indigenous communities. Now, we must remember that not every Indigenous community in person is the same. This is a colonial construct, and this is something that the Canadian government wishes to imply in order to continue to erase individual identity. But the understanding of the complexity of gender and sexualities is a thread that is common throughout many Indigenous communities. And the meaning of Two-Spirit, the definition, varies between people and between culture. For some, it means to literally embody the male and female spirit, having two spirits within oneself. For others, there are other types of ways in which they speak of their gender and language that they use. A lot of the time, it is more complex and goes beyond the language that we have for it in the West, because we must remember that the concept of two genders, of men and woman, that is a Western colonial construct. That is something that is imported from the West and is not included in traditional Indigenous teachings. This is why it is so important to have culturally safe and culturally sound research and support for Indigenous youth and Indigenous communities. When considering gendered violence and sexual violence and environmental violence towards the bodies and communities of Indigenous peoples, we have to look through the framework of Western colonial concepts. By breaking down the way that the West views and perpetuates stereotypes of Indigenous peoples and youth, we can learn to understand why these are framed this way and begin to dismantle them. For example, colonization has created stereotypes of Indigenous peoples of being at risk, marginalized, vulnerable, not able, and in need of saving. But the truth is, being Indigenous is not a risk factor. Being an Indigenous person does not mean that you are inherently at risk. The reasons why the risk exists is the racism. It's the xenophobia. It's the misogyny. It's the patriarchal violence that exists within settler colonialism and within capitalism. This is the risk factor, and this is what actually makes Indigenous lives less safe. The power that exists within Indigenous communities and individuals is really beyond the scope of our Western minds, beyond what we can think, because the resilience and the power to overcome such horrid experiences is, again, unfathomable. And this is not a badge of honor, but this is a reality. Built into the landscape of Canada is this violent settler colonial legacy. And in the ongoing capitalist world that we live in, we have to be part of the change. We have to be part of the people who wake up out of their colonial coma and come to the realization that, as Audre Lorde and Absalon explain, we cannot destroy colonialism with their own tools. We have to begin to decolonize our minds, decolonize our hearts, and decolonize our communities. And this podcast episode is but a small step in that direction. Together, we explored some topics that are very vital to understand. We explored what colonization means and how its ongoing legacy is connected to environmental violence, bodily violence, the erasure and murder and oppression towards Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit communities. By breaking down these legacies and pointing to the ways in which change is coming, such as the Truth and Reconciliation Committee and in individual and collective action groups, we can really see and feel hopeful for a powerful decolonized future. While I wish we could sit here all night and discuss every single thing, I just wanted to take this moment to express gratitude for the Indigenous feminists and researchers and scholars who literally put their work out there so people like me and people like you can learn and can grow and can expand the world's capacity for love and really work towards decolonization. Indigenous communities have all the knowledge that they need, and their knowledge is deeply, deeply rooted to community, to land, to self, to spirit. And this is a powerful way, as Kathleen Absalon reminds us, to conduct research. Because the world and the lands contain so much knowledge and so much connection for Indigenous communities, it is vital that land back is a real thing. And I invite you to look a little bit more into that. All in all, some powerful, powerful lessons were learned during this course, and the Indigenous medicines that were offered to me and my fellow classmates and that I'm offering to you are something that I will take with me forever. The Indigenous medicine of personal connection to spirit, the medicine of art, the medicine of community and witnessing, the medicine of storytelling, and the medicine of collective action. Because again, it is vitally important that we know that decolonization and Indigenous futurity must happen within praxis, the connection of theory and practice. So now that we're all theoried up, let's get out there. I'm Laura, and this has been another episode of The Queer Feminist Witch. Thank you for being here. I love you. Have a beautiful day. Oh, that was really fun and really challenging to record. I'm just excited to get this information out there and to have an opportunity to work creatively in academia is a really fun thing. I just want to shout out a couple of books and a couple of things that I use throughout this podcast. And again, you can find all my citations in the show notes. But again, shout out to Kathleen Absalon, whose book, Kendosawin, How We Come to Know Indigenous Research Methodologies, has completely changed my life. I highly recommend it. I implement her research methods all the time. Another shout out is to the book Making Space for Indigenous Feminism, edited by Joyce Green. It's a collection of works, and it informed this podcast tremendously. At the same time, there's a Two-Spirit zine that we received in our course. Shout out to Marie Lang, who created that zine. And I just wanted to give a huge shout out to my professor, Professor Yante Foote. You have really inspired me this semester, and I am just so thankful to have this opportunity to create this piece of educational work. And to everybody who is listening to the end, I love you. You are just as beautiful and committed to this work as every other person that I quoted in this podcast. So thank you for being here. See you next time. Bye.